up, y'all? What is good? This is Miss Lyrae Podcast. Thank you guys for tuning in with me on another episode. Thank you for whoever has been supporting and watching me thus far. I really appreciate everybody's ability to really tune in and really support my craft and what I want to do on my podcast. And we are here today with Mr. Jason Moore. Say hello to the people.
Hey, what's going on, people? How you doing?
Thank you for agreeing to come on the show with me today. I really appreciate it. I saw your Instagram page and I was like, I've got to get him on the show. He seems like he's doing a lot in the community, not just with, you know, mortgage loan officer work, but also you have your own show as well. And so when I noticed that, I was like, I've got to bring him on to learn more about what he does.
Absolutely. Shout out to the Morehouse Show on Facebook.
Yes. Clap it up for that. So just to get right into it, I want to see what inspired you to go into mortgage brokerage.
Well, that's a very good question. So I went to West Virginia State University, right outside of Charleston, West Virginia. I got my degree in finance, and I always wanted to be in the finance world. And when I graduated, I started in a job in insurance, and it wasn't the area I wanted to be in.
Yeah.
So I was doing fine, and I decided to buy my first house. And awesome. When I bought my first house, the process was a nightmare. It was horrible.
Yeah, it's a lot that goes into it. So I'm in that process now.
It was months and months. Well, see, well, I can make it a lot easy for you. But I was like talking to the guy, and he was really successful. And I was like, all right, if this guy, I can make this process way better and way easier for my customers. Mm-hmm. So I was like, that's what spurred my interest to get in the loan world and helping people get finances. It was because my process was so bad when I first started. Mm-hmm. It took so long. And I'm like, I can do this way better. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I love people. So just kind of connected. I had finance and people. So that's what kind of drew everything together.
Mm-hmm. What do you feel like made the process so hard for you when you got your first home?
Well, it was the time frame. At that time, it was 2009 when I bought my house, because it was a lot of refinances going on. Mm-hmm. Because rates were low. Mm-hmm. And I just think the process, I went through this program to like help for down payment assistance, because I was young. I was like 23 at the time.
Yeah.
And it just took longer. Like, it took probably about 3 months, which is ridiculous, right? Mm-hmm. When you try to buy a house.
Mm-hmm. That's a long time. Yeah. Especially when you're ready to just get it going.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like also maybe not having the knowledge is where it was tough for me in the beginning of, like, not, like, being scared of going into home ownership. And I feel like that's where a lot of people possibly are getting that fear, is because it's like, if you don't really know all of what you're getting into, and then what the after effects of what it is after you invest into the home, you're like, what am I getting myself into?
Right.
And so it's best to, like, get that knowledge like you did, or if not, then work with a team that really knows what they're talking about.
That's the important thing. You don't have to know everything, but you got to be with the right people in your corner to work with you, to show you, guide you. And that's what I kind of do. Mm-hmm. Before you came, I had an appointment, and I was guiding into younger ladies, showing them the process of how to get financing. Mm-hmm. How to get some down payment assistance, and just kind of show them the way to make sure they don't buy a house just because they can qualify for it, but make sure they're comfortable with the payment. So there's all kind of different things, and that's what I'm here for. I'm here to teach and educate and just really help people. That's my main thing.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. I really am glad that that's what inspired you, because I feel like it's all about helping people and not just helping ourselves.
Right.
You know? So to get into the next question, what are some tips that you would have for a first-time home buyer?
Come talk to me. Number one, get a good loan officer that can guide you through the process.
Yeah.
Get a good realtor that's going to be on your team, that's going to show you the process and really hold your hand through it. Mm-hmm. Answer all the questions that you may have. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing. Get a good team around you, because they can help you. You'll have a lot of questions throughout the process. So if you have that good team there that's going to be there working for you and really about you, that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And so to kind of go into a different route, I've noticed that sometimes, and maybe you can teach me about this, I know that mortgage loan officers, real estate brokers actually tend to get commissions off the sale. And so at what point do you allow them to kind of push you into going into the next price bracket outside of your budget? I've noticed that some real estate people do that.
Well, None that I work with, because yeah. I just don't work. I'm very selective of who I partner with and mm-hmm. work with. So none of my agents would do that. Mm-hmm. They're always going to look out for the customer's best half mm-hmm. and best interests. So I haven't had that experience. Mm-hmm. Again, if you're having that problem, come talk to me and I'll get you the right people around your corner. That's all I can say. Because yeah, they shouldn't be doing that at all. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
Just try to sell a house to get a higher commission. It should never be about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that lets me realize that it's when you're building your team as a mortgage loan officer, you want to make sure you have the proper people in place who have the same vision that you have when it goes to helping people to find that perfect home
right.
for them. Okay. So there are different loans out here that you can go through. Well, some of the more popular ones that I've heard about are the FHA and the conventional loan. Now, I kind of have been learning what the difference is, but do you know what differences are going to make the difference for somebody who wants to go into an FHA or conventional loan?
Yeah, it comes down to every customer situation is different. So it's not a blueprint for, hey, one thing fits all. Mm-hmm. You have to look at every customer's individual mm-hmm. needs and wants. Mm-hmm. So it's not a right way or a wrong way. It's not a wrong way if you go FHA or conventional. Mm-hmm. Like say at the time, you may not be able to go to conventional because your credit may not be high enough. Mm-hmm. So FHA may be a good factor for you.
Mm-hmm.
Conventional, they're going to have a lot better perks as far as the private mortgage insurance, PMI mm-hmm. is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
On FHA, that insurance doesn't drop off.
Mm-hmm.
On conventional, it drops off once you get down to once you pay 20% equity in the property.
Mm-hmm.
So to give you an example, to use round numbers, so if you bought a house for $100,000, once you paid it down to $80,000, that insurance drops off.
Gotcha.
On the conventional. On FHA, you could pay that $20,000 and you're still going to have that insurance.
Mm.
But at the same time, if you don't qualify for a conventional loan and you're trying to get a house now, you can still go FHA.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you pay a little bit higher rate, but then you come back around and refinance it in a couple years when you get your credit up mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just the thing. It's about knowledge on what route you want to take and what's best for you mm-hmm. as the individual. There's no right or wrong way to do it.
To go with it. I had a conversation about one of my friend's family members who went into refinancing their home, and they ended up having to pay more in the refinance. Have you ever seen that happen in this process of refinancing?
Now, you got to be specific. What do you mean by pay more?
Like their mortgage payments were like, I think, $800 a month. And then when they refinanced the home, it increased to like $1,000 a month.
There'd be situations where, say, if you got cash out of equity in the mm-hmm. property, so if your house is $100,000, I'm just using round numbers here,
yeah,
and then you refinance and then you took $20,000 of equity out, that would raise the payment to make it more.
Mm-hmm.
But traditionally, you're looking, when you do a refinance, you're looking at a few different things. It's either saving money on interest long term by paying the house off quicker,
mm-hmm.
or you're saving money on your monthly payment.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the primary things you look at. Mm-hmm. And there's also instances, hey, I have all this equity in my house, I need to do some repairs, let me take some of the equity out and use that money to fix up the house.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different avenues you can take. So yeah, your payment could go up, but you may have got $20,000 out to fix up your house. So that would be the instance that happens.
Okay. Yeah, I've kind of been trying to teach my audience about real estate in general. I've heard that it's such a great investment, not only for your family to have a home to live in, but also an opportunity to, which I'm trying to go into, is like flipping homes, like being able to go into a home, maybe 2 to 5 years, however long, and rent it out or sell it. My thought is that renting out is more of a better return on investment because it's a revolving door of return. But do you think there's a difference in what's better?
I can speak to this directly because I have a rental property.
Okay. Awesome.
A lot of people say that, I mean, it has its pros and cons. That's the thing I want your people to understand. It's a lot of work being a landlord and mm-hmm. having a property.
Mm-hmm.
One of the keys one of my mentors taught me is have a good property manager.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely didn't have that where
mm-hmm.
I was at.
Mm-hmm.
that could have definitely changed things for me.
Yeah.
But you have to vet the people and make sure you have the great renters in, because I definitely had problems where I had to kick people out early for not paying, and property damages and court costs and all that stuff. So people are like, oh, I'm just going to rent my house out. I was like, it sounds good in general, but you got to make sure you have the right systems in place to do that.
Right.
But it definitely is a good investment too, because the rental house I have, I've had it for 3 years, and it's just paying down the mortgage
each.
You know, I'm not making per se a lot of money on the monthly end. Cash flow, but at the same time, it's just paying down that mortgage. So when I look to sell that house down in the future, or my equity is going to be a lot stronger than it would if I just sold it right then.
Right then. Gotcha. Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to go into as well. My family, you know, I have, like, my grandmother, she has a couple rental properties, and she actually goes through the, it's the program where if you don't have a lot of money, but I forgot what it's called.
Are you talking about, HUD? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, HUD. Okay. Sorry. I'm not educated in this area, and that's why I wanted to interview someone who is, but she goes through that, and my uncle also has rental properties who, when he's talked about where he has to go in and fix up the property, and it's a lot that goes into it, but he's actually going in and fixing it himself.
I've been like him.
Yeah.
I'm lucky to have a great family. Like, my dad, he helps me out a lot, especially because my rental house is not here in North Carolina. So, but there's been times that, we've had to go in and do some work, you know, fix some things up, put some new floors in. Like, I mean, it's just, it can be a lot, but you gotta play the long-term game. You can't get caught up in the short-term numbers.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. You gotta look at that at long-term investment. Do you feel like it was cheaper for you to go that route of fixing it yourselves versus hiring somebody to go do it?
Well, my dad used to be a carpenter, so like when you have someone that has that knowledge, it's definitely cheaper to do it. It's more time, which time is an investment. Time's a cost as well.
Yeah.
But money as far as savings, yes, it's a lot cheaper than hiring someone to do some things.
Okay. So let's switch places a bit. Where are we? Currently at right now?
Where are we currently at as far as regards to what?
So far as like the company that we're at, like where you work as a mortgage loan.
Okay, so where are we at right now in the building? So we're actually at my office in Briar Creek. This is Homeside Financial's headquarters in Raleigh. I actually came to this company in April. It's been one of the best decisions I ever made to leave. I was at a bigger bank, and I came here. It's a lot better culture. I feel like we're more customer-centric, so we like to help people, really about the customer. So I'm glad to be here at Homeside, and I work with a great group of people. Cedric Burke, manager, is an amazing person to manage. He actually manages the whole state of North Carolina now. So.
Oh, wow. That is big. So you probably feel like you've learned a lot just from being a part of this company in general.
Absolutely. I mean, it's good to have the right people around you,
yeah.
and that's why I came here, because just the good people and just the good culture.
Okay. So let's move more into what you do outside of being a mortgage loan officer and working for the companies you work for. I saw on your page that you have the Moore Show. Let's talk more about that. Like, what does that all entail in general?
Okay. The Moore House Show, it was started when I read this book from Gary Vaynerchuk called Crushing It. And it was a way to reach more people and be involved with the community and get insight from entrepreneurs, business owners, salespeople, and really to sit down with them and get some insight along with some little financial advice throughout throughout the way, and just kind of get to know the people and the movers and shakers in this area. So me and my partner, Casey House, shout out to her at Caldwell Banker Advantage. Couldn't do it without her. She helped me. I came to her with the idea. I'm like, hey, we should do this. And she's like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, all right. So we started interviewing go-getters. We just dropped a new episode with Marcus Ogden. So shout out to him as well.
Okay,
he's came out with a new book, The Success Cycle. Former NFL player, professional speaker, author, doing a lot of big things. And just getting to talk to him and just seeing how he goes through his business throughout his day and what makes him successful. So just kind of giving people insight. That's all the show is for. Give people insight, look at what's going on in the community, and see who the movers and shakers are. So just adding value to people's life. That's the whole premise of the show.
That's awesome. That's
and just short interviews too. 5-7 minutes.
Yeah, so but just enough to get that out there.
Just enough to get it out there.
Yeah. Awesome. So let's go into community. Have you, other than the Moore Show, done anything in the community, any initiatives that you have going on right now?
All kinds, yes.
Awesome. I love it.
One of my favorite charities I'm really heavily involved with is Models for Charity. They're an organization that started as a pass-through charity locally in the Triangle, by Michelle Smith. She's the founder and president of the organization. So basically they do modeling events and they raise money, we make money, and we donate that to a local charity, and we pick different ones every time.
Wow.
I don't know, when is this podcast dropping?
It will be next Thursday.
Next Thursday, yep. So we'll give a shout out to our 10th anniversary gala on March 26th. 10 years, it's benefiting the local animal shelter, and it's gonna be an amazing time, 20 themes, so get your tickets for that. We can get some info
maybe
out there on the when the show drops. But yeah, that's one of the big events. Last year we raised about $20,000.
Wow.
For the Tribal Family Services. So this year we're looking to raise money for the animal shelter. So
that is awesome. That is really awesome. Because I've been talking to my audience, or I guess you could say, they probably say I've been preaching to them at this point. But I've been kind of talking to them about, be the change you want to see. You know, a lot of times we talk about we want to see more community development, more unity. But sometimes it takes you yourself to get out there and do it. And then others can follow and see your journey and your path. And so it's amazing that others can look at you and see, okay, Jason is actually out here making moves, not only in his career and his path, but actually giving to the community information and actually giving donations to people who are in need. So I give you a huge applaud for that. That's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love to see that. I love to see that. So let's get into where we can find your episodes from your show for The Moore Show.
The Moore House Show, you can find that on Facebook.
Okay.
Just at The Moore House Show.
The Moore House Show.
And The Moore House is Moore, my last name, M-O-O-R-E.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I just said The Moore Show. The Moore House Show. I got to get it right. No, because I tell people that all the time, get my name right on my on my business. So, sorry about that. So far as, let's go back into when we talk about loans for FHA and conventional. A lot of people get caught up in the credit score. We all know your credit score is very important. What do you consider a good credit score for going into home buying?
That's a tough question because it depends on the situation you're looking at. I mean, obviously, it would be great if everyone had 800 credit scores, but that's not reality. You know, I deal with a plethora of different clients from all different types and backgrounds and financial capabilities. So a good credit score depends on what you're looking for. I would say 700 is a good score for someone.
Okay.
But that doesn't need to deteriorate if you're below that to buying your house. And then if you come to someone like myself, I can show you how to get your credit score up higher as well at the same time. So if you're not where you need to be, we have the tools and resources to show you, right, this is what you need to do to get your credit score up to the level you need it to be.
Okay. That's awesome. It's good. Because a lot of times you may not know the different areas of what it takes to get approved for even a loan. And so to have all of that in one house with your mortgage loan officer, and you have a real estate folks, but also people who can help you build up your credit, because that's like the number one thing that a lot of us are not knowledgeable in.
Right, yeah.
I know growing up, I wasn't taught how to keep my credit score high, and it's just not within everyone's home. So to be able to have that help and assistance,
same here. I come from the same type of environment that you grew up in, so it's just really like learning. I think that's what kind of driven me to learn more about finance and go into that field. It's just because I just didn't grow up in a background where that was like readily available to me. So I always wanted to just learn and expand my horizons on that.
Definitely. So let's say, for instance, I have a credit score of 680, right? And I want to get it to 700. I know that there are different factors that take into account, but like, what is the time frame that you typically could see you could get somebody's score to 700?
Again, there's no one fits all answer. It depends on everyone's situation, like what you have going on. Sometimes it's credit card balances, you know? So anytime you're over 50% of the balances on your credit card that hurts your credit score.
Yeah,
so
I've heard about that.
Say we'll use round numbers. Say if your credit card limits $1,000 and you had a balance of $700, mm-hmm. that's hurting your credit score. Mm. You pay that balance down to $499, mm-hmm. then your credit score is going to go up. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. It's just tidbits like that that can help you really reach the goals you want to reach as far as increasing your credit score.
Okay. And I've also heard about even when you talk about having like credit cards because you want that line of credit on it. And it, I have been scared to have a credit card for years, like until now.
Okay. All right. I was like, don't be scared. Like,
because it always
it can't hurt you unless you use it wrong.
Right, if you don't pay that bill. Yeah. But that's the thing. It felt like it's another bill. And so it was just like, I don't know if I want a credit card. But then I realized the benefits from it, too.
Yeah, I've run into a lot of people like that. And it's just how you use things. Mm-hmm. If you get a credit card and you use it to help grow your credit score, mm-hmm. and you pay that balance off at the end of the month, mm-hmm. you're growing your credit, mm-hmm. you're making a good payment history, so that's helping your credit, mm-hmm. and you can also get reward points, mm-hmm. things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's just the responsibility of using it. It can be tough. Some people really have to develop that discipline to use it the right way.
Yeah.
And not everyone's there, but just go at the level. But I recommend that, yes, everyone should have some sort of credit line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I agree, and I learned that, so I was like, okay, let me.
Some people are against that. Like, yeah. We'll say like Dave Ramsey, and then they're like, no credit cards at mm-hmm, all. Mm-hmm. But if you use it responsible, it's not going to hurt you.
Yeah. What was his philosophy of why?
He's all about paying cash for everything.
Okay.
Which in a perfect world is great, but like if you don't have any debt per se, or that's your goal. But if you're trying to buy a house, you have to have some type of lines of credit,
yeah.
for your credit score to be a certain level, mm-hmm. to get the better rates to help you financing a house, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So there's certain benefits, and like there's pros and cons to everyone. I'm more of an in between. I love a lot of stuff to David Ramsey. So no, not a negative shot on him at all.
Yeah.
I'm more like, he's like more like one way to like the extreme. And I'm more of like in the middle. Like,
yeah.
You should be paying off debt and making smart financial decisions, but also at the same time, you should have credit to grow your financial credit as well, mm-hmm. and look to make smart investments as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I agree with you wholeheartedly after now learning my lessons. But now I want to get into, because some people, when they are building up their credit with a credit card, like, and I know it now, but then again, the information given to me could be false. So I've been told that, like, if you pay on your credit card bill before the actual statement comes, it doesn't impact your credit to the credit bureaus.
Well, it still shows a positive payment history. Mm-hmm. So if you're paying it off, I mean, sometimes you can keep a small balance. If you're really looking to grow your credit, keep a small mm-hmm. balance and just pay it. But in a perfect world, if you have the money, it's good to pay it off just to you're not paying interest on the money.
Right.
That's the key thing. So that's when it becomes a bill, when you start paying interest on it. That's when it becomes a liability. Mm. If you pay it off before, it's not. But you're growing your payment history. So it all depends. Everyone's situation is different.
I know,
like,
what you mean now. Yeah.
Just, you know, like, yeah. some people may need to carry a small balance and pay a little interest so they can get their score whereas you may not have to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Your credit score might be fine just with the payment history.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really where it's at, just having that history of I'm paying something every month on it and it's boosting that score up.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad to know I'm doing it right. Do you have any tips for how someone can best go into the mission of wanting to flip homes? Like, that's my interest right now. Like, just three top tips.
Okay, so, I mean, I handle the financing side, mm-hmm. but I do know, I have a connection with a girl, Jamila Jordan. We do some events. She's with EXP Realty.
Okay.
But she's also the head of TRID. There's an organization that all their involvement is how to make money in real estate, either flipping houses or turning things into investments. So it's being connected with a group of people. They have hard money lenders. They have all kind of different avenues. So mm-hmm. depending on what you want to do in that world, getting connected with the right people is the main thing.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a traditional bank like us, like Homeside or any other bank, they may not. not be set up that way to help with flipping houses, because the rates would be a lot higher because investment, but like there's a certain group of people that can show you and connect you with the right people to do that. Mm-hmm. And you just gotta make smart decisions too. It's hard, you gotta really know your numbers when you're in that game. Mm-hmm. But finding investments here in the Triangle is tough. Mm-hmm. And because like the real estate market's so hot and booming, there's a lot of investors, so it's hard to find the deals per se, not the money. The money's out there, finding the deals, that's the toughest part.
That's gonna make it happen. So now it sounds also like location plays a part in it as well.
Absolutely, location's always key in real estate, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard a talk of like Raleigh is so expensive. It's not even just a talk. I've seen the numbers. and I'm looking for a home now. I'm hoping to close soon. But, like, it's like the market here is more expensive, and it's probably because it's more booming, like you said. More people here.
Yeah, I think some of the top real estate markets in the whole country, Nashville and Raleigh, and Austin. Mm-hmm. Those are like the three top real estate markets in the country. And that's because so many people come into this great city because there's so many things going on with like the Research Triangle Department, you know, mm-hmm. RTP. Then you have just such a vibrant area, the mild winters, mm-hmm. close to the beach, close to the mountains. Mm-hmm. It's just a great overall place to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I think the numbers, like, it changes, but they said like 65 people a day are moving to Raleigh or the Triangle.
Yeah, it's booming, and it's because business is booming.
Is booming here, yes.
Yeah. And so people have been talking more about like the Knightdale, Clayton area, Holly Springs, those areas you're going to get more bang for your buck.
You will definitely get more bang for your buck on the outside city limits. Mm-hmm. For me, it's not where I want to be, but
I mean, I know it's so far from everything.
I like being where things are going on, but yes, you can definitely get more house going to the outskirts of the city.
Mm-hmm.
That's mainly, a lot of places are like that, set up that way as well. But you can still find affordable places. It's just hard. There's a lot because so much competition. Mm-hmm. But if you have the right realtors, the right resources, mm-hmm. they can get you where you want to be at.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a lot of great information, and I don't know about you, but I feel like the housing market is a lot better now than it has been maybe 5 to 10 years ago. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes. I mean, I got started in this business about 10 years ago. So mm-hmm. 2009 is when I got in this industry. So that was right after the great mortgage crisis of 2008.
Yeah.
So the mortgage rates, I mean, the industry was devastated, and it was just, I was part of the recovery, you know, just doing lending different ways with more regulations, which is good because I feel like we needed those regulations because things got out of hand in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So now it's just like the industry, the houses are appreciating, it's the rates are low. It's a really good time to buy a home mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah, and I agree with that, and I've noticed it, and I'm like, I mean, I've always wanted to go into home buying and real estate ownership, but it's just like knowing the right time too, because you don't want to get into it and you lose out on the benefits of doing it at the right time. So I guess now it's more of timing is everything too.
Timing is always key too. But I don't think you can go wrong when rates are like ranging in like low threes and things mm-hmm. like that right now. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I mean, if you can find a good deal, it's like now is the time to strike.
Yeah.
Because you just never know when the rates will be that low again.
Exactly. You got to get it when you can. So let's switch gears to more about what's going on in the world of coronavirus.
I'm not a medical expert. I just want to throw this on the record.
But not about.
I'm a finance expert. You know, I'm a doctor towards that degree, but not the medical end.
But more so into like the epidemic, because I'm looking at it more from a finance perspective as well. Like, there's this epidemic of now everybody's scared. Now you got people potentially not wanting to come to work. And not saying that this will turn into this. I'm probably going so far in my thinking. But you know, there was a
worst
time,
case scenario, disaster movie.
You never know. Like, I'm like, are we in the apocalypse? Like, survival of the fittest at this point. But like, if you go into thinking about, if people are now, you know, my 9-to-5 is HR, working human resources. And so I'm looking at it from a business perspective, and I'm looking at, okay, I've got to protect my people. Well, if people can't come to work, we can't get our job done unless we work remotely. And then you're talking about people's economic development now starts declining if that happens. So now it goes into, does it hit the house market.
Well, it's already, if it's hit all the markets, I mean, like, the if you pay attention to the stock markets the last week or so, I mean, it's been dramatic drops because of the coronavirus. So that it definitely hurts the housing market as well. Mm-hmm. Now, with that being said, I mean, the Fed's just lowered the rates because of that to try to offset all the scare. Mm-hmm. So again, the mortgage rates are super low, so it's like still a great time to buy at the same time. But who knows? I mean, it's so much that's uncertainty in. And so much uncertainty in the market.
Yeah.
And that's why the market's like going down, because people just don't know what can happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I have friends in other job fields where they canceled all travel. Mm-hmm. So I had friends at like major tech companies were like, yeah, don't come into the office.
Mm-hmm.
Just work remote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's definitely affecting things.
Mm-hmm.
But with all that being said, it's still a great time to buy because the rates are so low. With all that, you know, when the market's down, buy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's a good point, that there's an accommodation for that fear, you know, in mortgage prices and home buying. When I even think about like the presidential elections that are going on right now, like have you ever experienced where whoever's in office and not more so the president, but the administration in which they function under, does that impact things? Because you're talking about government funding and how those things can impact that market too.
I mean, it does have some effect on the markets, but the markets are going to be what the markets, they kind of go off of what the economic outlook is, not saying just whoever's in office. Typically during election years, rates are historically lower than what they would be, but it affects the markets, but not as big as you would think it would.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. So would you rather go into a commercial investment or real estate investment? Now I'm just more so picking your brain of like how you feel about certain things.
Well, again, it depends on what type of investment we're talking about. Commercial, like if I looked at numbers to see what would make sense, but I mean, you can do really well in commercial deals too, but real estate's on residential side, you can do well. So it's not one right or bad answer. It's just whatever the numbers make sense. You'd have to look at each deal individually. So that's, it's hard to answer that question.
I get it, because it's subjective to what your goal is.
Right.
Like for me, and the reason why I asked it is because I'm trying to figure out, I know I want to go into real estate investment, but is there ever an opportunity for me in commercial, you know, investment as well? And I think there's a lot more that goes into commercial investment, and it's probably a lot more costly because you're talking about, like, for instance, if I wanted to own this building and rent it out to people, that's an opportunity for a return on investment, but the investment itself could be extremely high.
Yeah, you're looking at maybe a couple million.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
for a building like this. But,
yeah.
I mean, maybe you get together a group of people to go on something like that.
Right.
You know, like you... there's just other different ways you'd have to like go about things.
For a person who has a first property, first time home buyer, because I've heard this thing of when you get your second home, that's your investment property, not your first home. Is that true? Or do you know?
I mean, it just depends on how you look at things. I always see a property as an investment. That's what it is. Owning a property, depending on like what your interest rate is and things like that, it depends on how much a rate of return you want to get, how much appreciation you're getting. So you got to really pay attention to the numbers. Like I'm keep on like harping on that. Like the numbers matter. But owning a single family residence could be an investment. Say you buy a $100,000 house, 5 years now it's 125 or 130. That's an investment. It's went up. It's gained value, and you pay that, and you could either sell that or you could rent it. You can do so many different things with that home. So I wouldn't say that just you have to have a second home to make it an investment. I think the initial single family resident could be an investment as well.
Okay.
Is an investment.
Yeah, definitely. And I went on or I don't know if you've heard of this podcast called Earn Your Leisure. They're pretty boomy now. They talk a lot about financial things. So they had a guest on there talking about how people are now going into not just like a single family home or a townhome, but Airbnbs has become a good investment.
Absolutely. I know a really good friend, Amanda Williams. She's very big into Airbnb. She's the traveling realtor. Mm-hmm. What they do is they don't necessarily buy a home, but they talk to a landlord and arrange a lease agreement. Mm-hmm. And then they Airbnb the property from there. They fix it up, make it Airbnb. And then I've seen it. I mean, they've made really good returns with that. Mm. So the only underlining thing is that you got to be careful about the laws.
Yeah.
Like if a law, but if the things keep on going how they are, like, yes, you can make some really good income doing that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You got to know and be smart about it and mm-hmm. know how to negotiate the right deals. But yeah.
Yeah.
The person on that would be Amanda Williams. Go talk to her, the traveling realtor.
Yeah, I thought about maybe that could be like for folks who are. Nervous about going into purchasing a home and may not have the finances right now. Maybe that's another route. That I don't know if it's cheaper, you know. I just wonder, is it as fruitful? Because I was thinking about, okay, if I'm going to invest in getting an Airbnb and I'm now letting people rent it out, but like the rest of that lease or that property itself still has to be paid off. But it's still like going into your own.
Yeah,
home.
The thing is, you wouldn't really want to buy the house to do the Airbnb. Like now, that like the way is you want to rent something mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and then do the Airbnb on top of that. You mm-hmm. just have to know the rate of return on like how many days of occupancy you have during mm-hmm. that month to make the amount of money you want to make. Mm-hmm. So you kind of got to do the breakdown that way.
Yeah.
But again, I'm not the expert on this, but I do know the expert on this. Amanda, she's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not either. It's more of an opinionated type of thing that I'm kind of coming with it. It's like, for me, I look at it too, it's probably not as much stipulations on it. And not, because I'm thinking about like, if you go into renting a property now or buying a home, now you're talking about having to get approved for a loan. You're talking about having to get approved with your credit score. You're talking about having to go into all of those areas. Whereas if you just go into a lease, like just if you rent an apartment, you know, then you can go into not having to worry about all of that other stuff.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just thought it was interesting. I don't think a lot of people have explored it a lot.
It's I mean, like anything, it's more work than you have to put some time and like get these places fixed up, and you got to have the right staff to go clean it and make sure everything's like going smoothly. It's a team effort. It's work, but like if you do it the right way, it could be very lucrative.
Yeah.
A way to earn income.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So is there anything that you would like people to know more about the Morehouse Show or what you do in your mortgage home loan officer career or just about you in general?
Well, I mean, let's say give my introduction more to me, myself, I guess. Like, I do that as my job as a senior loan officer. I like to be involved in charities. I do the Morehouse Show, but that stuff's all irrelevant to like my main passion and purpose. Right. I feel like me as a person, I just believe in helping people and just showing them a way to get better financially secured, mm-hmm. make financial smart decisions, mm-hmm. and just helping the community and just giving back. That's more myself. Like, mm-hmm. I have certain titles, I wear different hats, but at the end of the day, that's probably my purpose of being here, just helping people and just showing them and guiding them and just putting them in a better way.
Yeah. I think that is so unique that you say that because I feel like that's my purpose. I feel like I learned that I enjoy it more. Like I just enjoy being able to change someone's mindset or change someone's direction of their life. Not that I'm trying to act as a life coach or to even act as God, but just being someone that can make a difference in society. And I love that you have that mentality as well. For me, it's about if you don't know what your purpose is, you don't know what to do next, you know?
Right.
My pastor kind of talks about that, where it's like, if you don't know your purpose, then you therefore don't know what your promises are.
Absolutely. We're having church up in here now.
And I don't mean to take it too far into that direction, but it's just like, that statement is just so true and so relevant, prevalent right. in many different ways. Sometimes, you know, I even when I was younger felt like I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Like, I didn't know what was next for me. Like, I mean, yeah, I went to school. I went and got my bachelor's, got my master's. I work in human resources, been in it for 6 years. And I enjoy it because it's helping people. But if I didn't know what my purpose was, I wouldn't have went in that direction.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
I 100% agree.
Yeah, yeah. And so I just think the message here is if you don't know what your direction is, maybe go back and find out what the purpose is.
And some people, I mean, it's not easy sometimes finding your purpose yeah. and direction. Yeah. I mean, but it's just about trying different things too mm-hmm. and just getting out there mm-hmm. and then getting to know people too. I think mm-hmm. it's a very important thing. Mm-hmm. When you asked me to be on this podcast, absolutely. Like, come out. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
let's get and to I know you that. Better.
Yeah, yeah.
and
seriously.
See what we're talking about, seeing how I can help people. I think it's very important. And that's, I've only been in Raleigh for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And people are like, how do you know all these people? Say, take the time to get out in the community and know people, just get to,
right.
to experience mm-hmm. the a great city that we live in. So mm-hmm. I'm really big on that. It's mm-hmm. just getting out, getting to know people, networking mm-hmm. and just seeing where you can help, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like social media has kind of been the disconnection in that sometimes. I mean, it's good for business and getting your platform out there and your name out there and your brand, but it's like some people get so caught up in the behind the scenes that they forget, no, it's actually real people out here. Like, go shake their hand. Go actually give them a hug. Speak to them in person.
They get caught up in the likes, you know.
Yeah. And the followers and the views
right.
and all that. And I don't want to go too heavy into that. But, I mean, it's true, though. You know, like, even in the field that you work in and just the things that you're doing in the community, it causes for that one-on-one connection and not just messaging somebody on social media or taking pictures and putting it up and saying, this is what I'm doing. Are you really doing it? Or is this just a picture? You know what I mean?
Right.
So again, going back to purpose.
For me, it's hard to keep up with all that stuff.
I know,
like,
it's a lot.
the social media is like, you want to share more and like show people, but it's like, you're always, for me, like, I'm always on the go. Like,
yeah.
You know, like
yeah.
I always got something event. Mm-hmm. I like to stay on the move, you know,
yeah.
stay doing things.
Yeah.
So that's tough. It's tough. Like, I was in South Florida for a wedding and probably should post some more pictures and like share more, but like sometimes you don't have time. You're always,
when you're having a good time,
yeah.
it doesn't have to always be documented.
You got to be in the moment. I mm-hmm. feel like we lack that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Where are you from, by the way?
So I'm from Pittsburgh originally, but I grew up in Huntington, West Virginia.
Okay. I can hear your accent. You have a northern accent.
I was in West Virginia a long time, so I don't have that country accent, but I was in West Virginia for a long time.
Yeah,
but, yeah. Yeah, definitely West Virginian.
Yeah.
Go Mountaineers. And
now, where did you attend college?
West Virginia State University. I was a Yellow Jacket HBCU school,
okay.
and I got my degree in finance. I played football, ran track there.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so do you feel like you've noticed a big difference from moving here versus living in West Virginia?
Yes, to say that. it's a different environment. I love West Virginia and the people. It's just like the it's just there's more going on. I feel like sometimes in the state of West Virginia, like the people. Like, I'm from there, so I can talk about it. Like, it's something to go. It's like you get caught up in, like, a certain box, and you're supposed to be a certain thing.
Mm.
But I love living here. It's like you can do so many more things, more opportunities to branch out and grow.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I love West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
love Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Huge Steelers fan, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay, go Steelers.
Black and yellow all day, so.
Well, see, for me, and I think sometimes when you're from a certain place, you tend to not really, like for me, I feel like Raleigh is not really it. But I'm from here.
I hear that. I hear that all the time.
Uh-huh.
And like people say, there's nothing going on here.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, what are you talking about? There's this festival. There's a beer
yeah.
festival. There's like, this Dreamville.
Mm-hmm.
Like J. Cole, 40,000 people coming in
mm-hmm.
for like music.
Mm-hmm.
There's like the beach 2 hours away. Like
mm-hmm.
there's always stuff going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
so many different events.
Mm-hmm. I think it's more like when you're so used to it, like, it's like you, and then also, for me, I feel like there's not enough culture here.
I left West Virginia, so
you're like, well, this is like not that bad.
No, I just came back from Miami. It's not like that here not either. Not like that. But I feel like you can. There's some sprinkles of a little bit of everything. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I like about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. Like there's a little bit of everything here.
Yeah. Did you operate in your mortgage loan officer license in West Virginia?
Yeah, I still have that license too.
Oh, you do? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And do you feel like there's a big difference in the housing market there?
Way bigger. Way different.
Different. Okay.
Just like, I mean, the housing prices in West Virginia are a lot smaller or a lot less than what they would be in Raleigh, mm-hmm. North Carolina.
Mm-hmm. To get your license in mortgage loan officer in that role, what does it take? Is it like you go get a degree or do you have to take an exam?
You have to take an exam to be a mortgage loan officer. Okay. When I was in Huntington, I worked for JP Morgan Chase. And mm-hmm. When you're with a bigger bank, you don't have to have a license per se because the bank does the training. Mm-hmm. But I also have mm-hmm. my Series 6 and 63. So I did some investment stuff back then mm-hmm. For them. Then when I moved to North Carolina, I changed companies because I was at another bigger bank here. Mm-hmm. When I moved here, you have to take a test to get your mortgage license in each state that you want to practice in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. I feel like I've picked your brain all the way until it can't be unpicked or picked any further. No, but I really appreciate you for coming on the show. This has been an awesome interview. I hope that you feel the same. I really enjoy getting to know more about what you know, getting to know more about what you do and who you are. And anybody who doesn't know who he is, go follow him. He is on Instagram, Facebook. Are there any other platforms that you're on?
Instagram, Facebook, Financial Ambassador on Instagram, More Never Less. Facebook, Instagram, follow me. The More House Show, follow, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Show some support for that. But mm-hmm. We're out in the community, so we're not just there on social media. We're out and about getting things done. Yeah. Yeah.
And so if you ever looking for somebody to work with that is very knowledgeable in what they are doing and they know how to operate and they can get you the assistance that you need and they have the team that does it, come to Mr. Moore himself.
I appreciate that.
Let's clap it up for you being on the show. Woo!
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate you all.
I enjoyed it. Anytime you want to come back on, let's do it again.
All right, let's do it.
Well, thank you for tuning in with Miss Lyrae. I hope you guys have a great day. We are the number one in inspirational, cultural, and social awareness podcasting. I only aspire to inspire you, cultivate you, and make you socially aware. Thank you for tuning in.
I appreciate it.
It's a good interview. I enjoyed it.